Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've spoken with you before about so-called forever chemicals, so-called, because they don't go away. They stay right here, around us, and in us. Here's the latest update on our forever friends. Ocean waves crashing on the world's shores emit more PFAS. Those are the chemicals I was referring to moments ago, into the air than the world's industrial polluters. That's The Guardian reporting on new research, raising concerns about environmental contamination and human exposure along coastlines. Yes, stay away from coastlines, apparently, is the latest clue. The study measured levels of PFAS released from the bubbles that burst when waves crash, spraying aerosols into the air. It found sea spray levels were hundreds of thousands of times higher. Levels of PFAS than levels in the water. The contaminated spray likely affects groundwater, surface water, vegetation, and agricultural products near coastlines that are far from industrial sources of these chemicals, according to Ian Cousins, a Stockholm University researcher and lead author of the study. Quote, there's evidence that the ocean can be an important source of PFAS air emissions, he said. It's definitely impacting the coastline. EPA has limited 6 forever chemicals in drinking water, but there are 15,000 of them. PFAS are a class of 15,000 chemicals used across dozens of industries to make products resistant to water, stains, and heat. Well, those are good things, aren't they? Though the compounds are highly effective, they're also linked to cancer, kidney disease, birth defects, decreased immunity, liver problems, and a range of other serious diseases. They are called forever chemicals because they do not naturally break down, and they're highly mobile once they're in the environment, so they continuously move through the ground, water, and air. They have been detected in all corners of the globe, from penguin eggs in Antarctica to polar bears in the Arctic. Now, if you could get penguin eggs into polar bears, then you've got something. The Stockholm researchers several years ago found that PFAS from ocean waves crashing are released into the air around shorelines, then can travel thousands of kilometers through the atmosphere before the chemicals return to land. The new research looked at levels in the sea spray as waves crash by testing ocean samples between Southampton in the UK and Chile. The chemicals' levels were higher in the northern hemisphere in general because it's more industrialized and there's not much mixing of water across the equator, Cousins said. It's unclear what the findings mean for human exposure. Inhalation of PFAS is an issue, but how much of the chemicals are breathed in and air concentrations further from the waves, that's unknown right now. Previous research, non-peer-reviewed so far, has found a correlation between higher PFAS levels in vegetation samples and proximity to the ocean. Cousin reported that, and his team is undertaking a similar study. He said the results showed how the chemicals are powerful surfactants that concentrate on the surface of water, which helps explain why they move from the ocean to the air and atmosphere. Quote, we thought PFAS were going to go into the ocean and disappear, but they cycle around and come back to land. And this could continue for a long time into the future, he said. Well, there's the good news. There's going to be a long time into the future. And speaking of foreverness, adhesive bandages, your Band-Aids, have been keeping our cuts, scrapes, or blisters protected from bacteria, damage, and dirt for quite a while now. But a new consumer report commissioned by Momovation, This report comes from fizz.org. Momovation is an online parenting community and website. It's found the adhesive bandages, or band-aids, as we like to call them. They may not be as helpful as once thought. In fact, they might actually be harmful to our health. Partnering with Environmental Health News, the Consumer Watchdog sent 40 bandages of different brands to a lab certified by the Environmental Protection Agency. The lab found 65% of the bandages contained detectable levels of phthalates. It's the only word with, no, naphtha, I guess, has a PH and a TH right after each. Better known as the forever chemicals. Such consumer reports raise awareness that many personal care products might contain these chemicals and incentivize policymakers to come up with regulations, says a distinguished professor of sociology and health science at Northeastern University, director of its Social Science Environmental Health Research Institute, just one institute. His name is Phil Brown, and he says bandages, just like menstrual products, can be used on very sensitive areas of the body where PFAS can easily be absorbed. You're usually putting band-aids on an open wound. That's what they're for. It may be a small area overall, Brown says, and maybe that scrape closes up in 2 or 3 days, but some people use plastic bandages a lot. You're bandage people. Even if you think this is a small exposure, you add up a lot of small exposures, he says, and you have a big exposure. PFAS have been found in cosmetics, deodorants, toilet paper, and menstrual products. Well, that's 1 out of 4 for me. People are getting a lot of different exposures from their everyday personal care products, he says. I guess I have to knock off the toilet paper. Hello, and you do too. Hello, welcome to the show.
Every day she takes a morning bath, she wets her hair, wraps a towel around her as she's heading for the bedroom chair. It's just another day, slipping into stockings, stepping into shoes, dipping in the pocket of her raincoat. It's just another day at the office where the papers grow. She takes a break, drinks another coffee, and she finds it hard to stay awake. It's just another day. It's just another day.
So sad, so sad. she's heading for the bedroom chair. It's just another day. Slipping into stockings, stepping into shoes, dipping in the pocket of her raincoat. Oh, it's just another day.
From New Orleans, where there's a big festival. There's always a big festival going on here, but a real big one now. Too big. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show, I say. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the smart world. First of all, if you're a Ring customer, you're going to get some money from Amazon. The FTC announced this week it'd be sending refunds totaling $5.6 million to Ring customers, paid from the coffers of Ring, a division of Amazon. The windfall stems from allegations made by the U.S. watchdog that folks could have been and were spied upon by cyber criminals and rogue Ring workers via their Ring home security cameras. Yes, I said security. The regulator last year accused Ring of sloppy privacy protections that allowed the aforementioned spying to occur or potentially occur. This was potentially reported by the Register, British tech journal. The FTC formally charged Ring with, quote, compromising its customers' privacy by allowing any employee or contractor to access consumers' private videos and by failing to implement basic privacy and security protections, enabling hackers to take control of consumers' accounts, cameras, and videos. Miscreants were able to, for example, brute force or credential stuff their way into victims' Ring accounts, including those of 55,000 American customers, due to a lack of security defenses in place. These accounts held Ring camera footage to playback, and intruders could even talk through the cameras to freak out their victims. I'd love to freak out my victims. In many instances, these folks took the opportunity to harass Ring users with expletives and racial slurs, and in one case, one user was even greeted with a death threat, this claimed. At the same time, some Ring employees and contractors were viewing and amassing private footage because there was simply nothing stopping them, according to the FTC. Customer service reps had access to cameras of users who didn't ask for tech support, and even those who did explicitly ask for help couldn't stop workers from accessing cameras that were unrelated to whatever issue was at hand. In the most egregious case, one employee went out of his way to view, quote, thousands of video recordings belonging to at least 81 unique female users, unquote, the FTC. At least they're unique. A coworker reported this behavior to her supervisor, who was alleged initially said this snooping wasn't that strange, until he realized the rogue employee was only reviewing videos of, quote, pretty girls, unquote. Ring was forced to hand over the $5.6 million to the FTC, which is now distributing it among affected Ring customers. These payments will be sent via PayPal to 117,044 pretty girl accounts. Assuming these accounts are divided evenly and that each account stands for one buyer, Ring customers will be getting back just under $50 apiece. You're welcome. And also in this smart, smart world, this from The Verge. In March 2023, a North Carolina student was stepping off a school bus when he was struck by a Tesla Model Y traveling at highway speeds, according to a federal investigation published this week. The Tesla driver was using autopilot, the automaker's advanced driver assist feature that Elon Musk insists will eventually lead to death and fully autonomous cars. The 17-year-old student who was struck and transported to a hospital by helicopter with life-threatening injuries apparently survived, but what the investigation found after examining hundreds of similar crashes was a pattern of driver inattention combined with the shortcomings of Tesla's technology, resulting in hundreds of injuries and dozens of deaths. Drivers using autopilot are the system's more advanced sibling. Full self-driving were not sufficiently engaged in the driving task, and Tesla's technology, quote, did not adequately ensure that drivers maintained their attention on the driving task. That's according to the NHTSA, NHTSA, National Highway thing. In total, NHTSA investigated 956 crashes starting in January 2018, extending all the way to August 2023. Of those crashes, some of which involved other vehicles striking the Tesla vehicle, 29 people died. There were also 211 crashes in which the frontal plane of the Tesla struck a vehicle or obstacle in its path. These crashes, which were often the most severe, resulted in 14 deaths and 49 injuries. NHTSA was prompted to launch its investigation after several incidents of Tesla drivers crashing into stationary emergency vehicles parked on the side of the road. We've heard about some of those. Most of these incidents took place after dark, with the software ignoring scene control measures, including warning lights, flares, cones, and an illuminated arrow board. In its report, the agency found that autopilot, and in some cases full self-driving, was not designed to keep the driver engaged in the task of driving. Tesla says it warns its customers they need to pay attention while using autopilot and FSD, which includes keeping their hands on the wheels and eyes on the road. But NHTSA says in many cases drivers would become overly complacent and lose focus, maybe because they think it's fully self-driving. When it says fully self-driving, and when it came time to react, it was often too late. In 59 crashes examined by NHTSA, the agency found Tesla drivers had enough time, 5 or more seconds prior to crashing into another object, in which to react. In 19 of these crashes, the hazard was visible for 10 or more seconds before the collision. Reviewing crash logs and data provided by Tesla, NHTSA found that drivers failed to brake or steer to avoid the hazard in a majority of the crashes. Crashes with no or late evasive action attempted by the driver were found across all Tesla hardware versions and crash circumstances, NHTSA said. NHTSA also compared Tesla's Level 2 automation features to products available in other companies' vehicles. Unlike other systems, autopilot would disengage rather than allow drivers to adjust their steering. This discourages drivers from staying involved in the task of driving, according to NHTSA. Crashes with no or late evasive action attempted by the driver were found across all Tesla hardware versions and crash circumstances. A comparison of Tesla's design choices to those of Level 2 peers identified Tesla as an outlier in its approach to L2 technology, that's Level 2, by mismatching a weak driver engagement system with autopilot's permissive operating capabilities, the agency said. Even the brand name autopilot is misleading, NHTSA said. Really, you think? Conjuring up the idea that drivers are not in control, while other companies use some version of assist, sense, or team, Tesla's products lure drivers into thinking they're more capable than they are. We're talking about the identifiers fully self-driving and autopilot. California's Attorney General and the state's Department of Motor Vehicles are both investigating Tesla for misleading branding and marketing. The findings cut against Musk's insistence that Tesla is an artificial intelligence company that's on the cusp of releasing a fully autonomous vehicle for personal use. Well, it depends what the word artificial is defining. Is it intelligence or company? The company plans to unveil a robotaxi later this year that's supposed to usher in that new era for Tesla. During the first quarter earnings call, Musk doubled down on his notion that vehicles produced by Tesla were safer than human-driven cars. Why should he stop now? And also, in this smart, smart, smart world, the tendency for chatbots powered by artificial intelligence to occasionally make stuff up or hallucinate has been well documented. This is from Science magazine. Chatbots have generated medical misinformation, invented fake legal cases, and fabricated citations. Now a new study finds that AI models are not only seeing things, but hearing things. OpenAI's Whisper, an AI model trained to transcribe audio input, made up sentences in about 1.4% of the transcriptions of audio recordings tested. A large portion of the fabricated sentences contained offensive or potentially harmful text. Quote, doctors are using speech-to-text tools to transcribe patient notes, says Allison Koenig, a computer scientist at Cornell University and lead author of the study. If Whisper is making up some transcription that isn't being said about how this patient killed someone and they're also taking this medication that's totally made up, imagine how severe those consequences are. Unquote. The study underscores the challenges that transcription tools face, the diversity of speech patterns around the world, or as Wolf Blitzer would put it, around the world, as well as the limited availability of training data, says Odette Scharenborg, a technologist at the Delft University of Technology, who's not involved in the study. No speech-to-text system is able to model all this variability in articulation and pronunciation to a good level yet, she says. Generative chatbots rely on large language models, Tom.
Large language models.
Which take text prompts and produce outputs by predicting likely words based on patterns learned after training on billions of pages of text from books and web pages. The transcription systems combine those language models with audio models that learn representations of speech patterns. The large AI models work well. Their transcriptions are more accurate than other speech-to-text tools that rely on small-scale language models. But Koenig wanted to take a closer look. Quote, even if the performance looks better than average, we have these edge cases within the text itself that we are worried people might miss if they're assuming that Whisper is transcribing everything faithfully, she says. Her team gave Whisper about 20 hours of audio each from speakers with and without aphasia, a language disorder where people tend to speak slowly and with more pauses. The audio segments contain conversational dialogue, like personal stories and fairy tale retellings. In runs conducted in April and May last year, the researchers found that 1.7% of the audio segments from speakers with aphasia and 1.2% of audio segments from people with no aphasia resulted in transcriptions with some fabricated text. About 40% of the fabricated segments were harmful or concerning in some way. About half of the concerning fabrications alluded to violence, sexual innuendo, or demographic stereotypes. For instance, audio about fire departments' rescues of cats included concocted additions about a blood-soaked stroller, and fondling. Innocuous audio about an umbrella included fabrications about a, quote, terror knife, unquote, and killing people. The researchers grouped the remaining concerning audio hallucinations into two other categories: false information about a person, such as made-up names, relationships, or health status, and false authority or phishing, such as tacking on YouTube-style sign-offs, thank you for watching, to the end of transcripts, or inserting links to actual or non-existent websites. The researchers say long pauses in speech, which are common in people with aphasia, could be one reason for the made-up texts. Silences, ums or ahs in the audio, doesn't get interpreted as silence, Koenig said. The language model picks these up as real words and creates entire fictional sentences. Because OpenAI itself has maintained or mentioned fabrications as a limitation of the model, Koenig wasn't surprised to find them. Quote, what was surprising to me was the sheer number of really harmful hallucinations, she says. OpenAI did not respond to a request for comment, even a fake one. Since the original experiment was conducted, OpenAI has updated its model to skip periods of silence and retranscribe audio if the software detects a probable hallucination. Last December, the research team re-ran some of the audio files. The updated whisper had eliminated most of the fabrications found in their previous tests. Performing regular audits to check for hallucinations and incorporating those feedbacks into the models, as OpenAI apparently did, will help ensure better models, Koenig says. In a statement, an OpenAI spokesperson says, we continually conduct research on how we can improve the accuracy of our models. The researchers only studied speech patterns stemming from aphasia, but they say other types of irregular speech, such as audio from the elderly, what? Or non-native language speakers, could also result in hallucinated texts. Training of these systems should be done on speech from different speaker groups and from different speaking styles, says the researcher. In the meantime, Scharenberg strongly advises that users manually check the output of any AI transcription tool, especially if they're using it to make important decisions. Not only because of potential hallucinations, she says, but also because all speech-to-text transcription systems make transcription errors. It's nice to know. That's reassuring, actually, in this smart, smart world.
China, long tall, stunning.
From New Orleans, this is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen... News of the Olympic Movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole III. It's going to be magical. That was Paris's mayor, Anne Hidalgo, just moments after learning her city had won its bid to host the 2024 Olympic and Paralympics. The Parisian mayor vowed to deliver an Olympics like unlike any other. But just as Paris Olympics apparatus had begun to unveil beautiful imagery of the grandiose transformation the city would undergo in time for the event, bills have racked up, leading to transport tariff revisions, and the Seine River has proven to be a far more complicated cleanup project than thought. Despite the hurdles, officials insist the Games are on track. How green will the Games be, according to France 24? And the organizers initially said the Games would be carbon neutral, meaning the event would achieve net zero greenhouse gas emissions. But after facing heavy criticism for being misleadingly optimistic, they instead went with hosting, quote, the greenest in history, unquote. The goal is to halve the carbon footprint emitted by London in 2012 and keep to a carbon budget under 1.5 million tons of CO2. A report published by environmental nonprofit Carbon Market Watch, middle of this month, commended Paris for being the first Olympic host in history to set up such a budget, but noted it would be very difficult to assess due to a lack of transparency. It remains unsubstantiated. No methodology or details about calculation are disclosed. Carbon budgets across editions might not be comparable, it said. Paris has made considerable efforts to limit its carbon footprint when it comes to the construction of its sports venue and athlete accommodations. 95% of them already exist or can be reused or recycled. And has also laid out the games in a way that will allow for visitors to mostly get around by foot, bicycle, and public transport. There's also going to be a wide offering of vegetarian food options during the games. But the report said activities directly linked to the games only account for about a third of the greenhouse gases emitted. Instead, it pointed to the main culprit, travel to and from the Olympics. That's 40% of Olympic emissions. No Olympic Games can be truly compatible with the Paris Agreement's objectives, the report said, adding that the Olympics in their entirety need a radical reimagining to really be viewed as sustainable. Meanwhile, Politico reports that the grand opening and accompanying circus surrounding the Olympics threatens to turn into a nightmare for France's security apparatus. Prime Minister, or actually President Emmanuel Macron, has opened a door to moving the Olympics opening ceremony away from the Seine, the river, to a more conventional venue like the Stade de France, the track and field stadium. The Seine, which winds its way through the heart of Paris, is vulnerable to drone attacks and snipers, officials fear. French authorities are being freaked out by recent Russian-backed cyber attacks and a resurgence of Islamic State-linked groups. France has already slashed in half the number of people allowed to attend the opening ceremony to around 300,000 while tightening entrance requirements. That's still not putting the security services at ease. Not even close. Key law enforcement officials involved in securing the Olympics said people were, quote, completely exhausted and really preoccupied, unquote, just 3 months before the games begin, 26th of July. Fears are growing that the government has neglected warnings and advice in recent months, with one French defense industry representative saying, quote, "Now it is too late," unquote. Since February, French media have reported on three separate incidents concerning laptops being stolen. They allegedly contained information about security matters related to the Olympics. Prosecutor's office said these thefts did not involve sensitive information. It's unclear whether these repeated incidents were targeted or random. Most recently, the house of an employee working for Thales, one of the private companies responsible for securing the games, was broken into and a company laptop was stolen. Thales said to Politico, the employee was not working on sensitive security matters. French Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin says authorities are foiling terror attacks every month and pledged that security services would be ready in time to handle all threats during the Olympics, which are expected to welcome 13 million visitors to France. Plan B has become Plan A, Darmanin told senators last month when presenting the Don-scaled plans for the opening ceremony. One reason for drastically reducing the opening ceremony was the major concern over drones loaded with lethal ammunition, he added. It was either this or no opening ceremony. But the opening ceremony is only one of several security challenges, according to Gérard Lacroix, Deputy General for Security at the French Defense Industry Association. When France won the bid to host, that association made a proposal to the government that specified the game's security needs, which the association said the French government chose not to follow. Well, why would they? It's a movement. And we all need one. Every day! Ladies and gentlemen, one of the lesser-known governors of the United States made some news this week. Kristi Noem, governor of South Dakota, blasted her way into the headlines when the Guardian newspaper published an excerpt from her forthcoming memoir in which she describes being so fed up with the puppy, 14 months old at the time, she was trying to train as a hunting dog, that she took him, into a gravel pit near her home and shot him to death. She also shot a goat. We don't know why the goat had to pay, but she made it clear why she shot the dog. She was trying to train him to be a hunting dog, and he just wouldn't train. Much like a recalcitrant AI, couldn't be trained, so she shot him. And just as that happened, or a few minutes later, her daughter returned home from school and asked Governor Noem, "Hey, where's Cricket?" That was the dog. As it happens, we have here at the show another excerpt from her book from later that same day.
Dinner that night was tense. My daughter Kennedy wouldn't touch her food. She spoke only to Brian, her father, and then only in monosyllables. She averted her gaze from me whenever possible. She ignored her normal post-dinner responsibilities, clearing the table, lowering the dishwasher. Except for one, she made a show of filling the dog's bowl with kibble. That was enough for me. As soon as the rest of the family retreated to the den to watch TV, I took her out to the gravel pit and shot her. Inside, the tension lifted almost immediately.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry
The three founders of Watcher Entertainment apologized to fans for their announcement they were exiting YouTube and would put their new shows exclusively on their own subscription streaming service. In response to a torrent of negative comments, Watchers Stephen Lim, Ryan Bergara, and Shane Madej said they were revising the plan and will now make their originals available for free on YouTube 1 month after subscribers get access to them. Said Watcher CEO Stephen Lim, quote, "We messed up." Madej said in the video, "We've been reading the things you've been saying, and we're sorry for the way we handled this, as well as the way we communicated it. We understand where you're coming from, and we're making immediate changes," unquote. Racist and pro-Nazi messages appeared on at least three digital billboards in Metro Detroit over the weekend to celebrate Adolf Hitler's birthday, April 20th. Yeah, 420. A group dubbed White Lives Matter Michigan took credit for the signs. White Lives Matter Michigan permeated censorship to obtain three roadside billboards for this 420 day of action, the group tweeted. The day is widely celebrated by white supremacists as well as supporters of something else. The messages were intended to deceive billboard companies by using somewhat veiled references to Hitler, Nazis, and other white supremacists. In a written message, a representative of White Lives Matter Michigan said the ultimate motive for the billboards and any of our activism is that we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. The billboard companies responsible for the messages apologized in a statement to Metro Times Detroit. They were purchased through billboardforme.com. Billboard for Me said the deceitful messaging was discreet enough to make it past the company's filters, and then the messages were purchased by an organization that disguised itself and its purpose with deceptive imagery and wording. The group used silhouetted images, acronyms, and other deceptive tactics to get past our initial scrubbing process, the company said. A good Samaritan discovered the images on the group's profile on X and let us know these boards were deceptive, upon which we immediately removed them. Billboard for Me pledged to do a better job screening messages in the future. We will be adding another set of human eyes to inspect all ads. We will search all names, photos, dates, and abbreviations to ensure no hidden agendas are being promoted in the ads. Billboard for Me expressed remorse. We recognize we made a huge mistake by not capturing these hidden messages before they were posted, and sincerely apologize to the communities in Michigan and everyone who had to see them. We pledge to do everything we can so that nothing like this ever happens again. Five Star Outdoor, which owns the billboards, also apologized and said it would try harder to avoid a similar situation. See you next 420. A Kentucky man who stormed the U.S. Capitol while carrying a Confederate battle flag was sentenced this week to more than 2 years in prison for pepper spraying two police officers in the face, partially blinding them for hours during the January 6th event. Israel Easterday, was 19 years old when he joined a mob of Trump supporters in invading the Capitol. He used pepper spray to assault two Capitol Police officers who were guarding the East Rotunda doors. Chief Judge James Boasberg cited Easterday's youth as a reason for handing down a prison term 2 years and 6 months that was five times lower than the Justice Department's initial sentencing recommendation. The judge said Easterday, who was homeschooled by his mother while living on a family farm, may not have fully appreciated what was going on there or recognized that the Confederate flag is a symbol of rebellion. The mob was there, said the judge, because it hadn't achieved what it wanted to at the ballot box. Easterday tearfully apologized to the officers whom he assaulted. He said he accepts responsibility for his actions on January 6th and is, quote, deeply ashamed, unquote, of himself. Dateline Nashville country music star Morgan Wallen faces charges stemming in part from accusations that he threw a chair off the rooftop of a six-story bar. He says he's not proud of his behavior and accepts responsibility. The singer, famous for One Thing at a Time, he responded publicly to his arrest in Nashville 2 weeks ago, responded on social media, got a May 3rd court date after being charged with 3 felony counts of reckless endangerment and 1 misdemeanor count of disorderly conduct. The chair at Chief's Bar landed about 3 feet from officers who talked to witnesses and reviewed security footage. Witnesses told officers they watched Wallen pick up a chair, throw it over the roof, and laugh about it. He was booked early April 8th and released. Quote, I didn't feel right publicly checking in until I made some amends with folks. I've touched base with Nashville law enforcement, my family, and the good people at Chiefs, the bar. I'm not proud of my behavior, and I accept responsibility, he wrote on X, formerly Twitter. He's one of the biggest names in contemporary country, currently on a tour. Quote, I have the utmost respect for the officers working every day to keep us all safe. Regarding my tour, there'll be no change. Signed, M.W. A couple of years ago, he was suspended indefinitely from his label after video surfaced of him shouting a racial slur. And a year before, he was arrested on public intoxication and disorderly conduct charges. In a letter to U.S. Judge Richard Jones for the Western District of Washington filed this week, the former CEO of Binance, one of the major crypto firms, Changpeng Zhao, apologized for his, quote, poor decisions, unquote, at the helm of the crypto exchange. That came ahead of his sentencing over anti-money laundering and sanctions violations. Quote, I apologize for my poor decisions and accept full responsibility for my actions, he wrote. In hindsight, I should have focused on implementing compliance changes at Binance from the get-go, and I did not. There is no excuse for my failure to establish the necessary compliance controls at Binance, unquote. He said he wished he could change that, describing how chaotic it was to keep Binance afloat in the early years, but argued Binance now has the most stringent anti-money laundering controls of any non-U.S. exchange. He apologized to his family, friends, employees, and the broader crypto community, saying he took comfort from letters of support sent on his behalf. U.S. prosecutors are seeking 36 months of imprisonment for Zhao. He pleaded guilty to anti-money laundering and sanctions violations, agreed to a $50 million fine, and stepping down as CEO of Binance. Binance agreed to pay $4.3 billion, one of the largest corporate settlements in history. And they did not pay in crypto. An Episcopal bishop snatched a female cleric's collar from around her neck when she momentarily forgot liturgical language during an Easter vigil at the Cathedral Church of St. Paul in Boston. Some laughs briefly filled the church, but then an awkward silence followed. The Reverend Tamara Tucker's discomfort was apparent as she touched her bare neck and said, quote, dang! Bishop Alan Gates quickly told her he was, quote, just kidding, handed her collar back and patted her on the back as she began to offer communion. The incident has angered people and renewed questions of power and gender bias in the Episcopal Church. It was just really sad that an occasion that's supposed to be joyous had to be marked by the specter of long-term misogyny. It's pretty essential to Christianity. See, even in a church that feels like it has advanced past that, said Reverend Rita Powell, chaplain of the Harvard Episcopal Community. Gates, the highest-ranking official in the Episcopal Diocese of Massachusetts, issued a formal apology nearly 2 weeks later on April 12th, calling the incident, quote, an instant of altogether misguided mischief. It was a devastating and demeaning act, which I regret with all my heart. It was not and would never be my intent to humiliate Reverend Tamra. However, that was precisely the impact of my action. I misused my authority, failed to extend episcopal grace, and transgressed personal space and boundaries. Unquote. Tucker has not spoken publicly about the incident. Reached by email, she said she was not yet ready to comment. Dateline Mexico City. The head of Mexico's detective service apologized this week for saying his country is the champion of fentanyl and meth production. And by the way, it is pronounced and spelled fentanyl, not fentanyl. The comments by Felipe Jesus Gallo, head of Mexico's CIA, but it's more like an FBI, appear to contradict past statements by the president, Manuel López Obrador, who has denied any fentanyl is produced in Mexico. It's clear that this word, champion, I guess, which was reported by AP in a Mexican media outlet, was inadequate, Gallo's office said. For that reason, Mr. Gallo publicly apologizes and explains his intent, in which he clearly shouldn't have used the word, was to emphasize the long battle that our countries had to carry out against the production, export, and shipment of synthetic drugs. Gallo's comments at a conference on synthetic drugs in Mexico City drew the president's ire at his daily news briefing a couple days later. Gallo originally said that since the 1990s, Mexico has been the champion of methamphetamine production and now fentanyl. Experts agree that cartels in Mexico use precursor chemicals from China and India to make the synthetic opioid and smuggle it into the United States. While fentanyl is not widely abused in Mexico, methamphetamine addiction is commonplace. Believe me, said Gallo, methamphetamine production has become industrialized. It's not just in the mountains anymore. And finally, a leading fashion designer whose accessories were used by celebrities from Britney Spears to the cast of Sex and the City was sentenced this week to 18 months in prison after pleading guilty in Miami federal court on charges of smuggling crocodile handbags from her native Colombia. Nancy Gonzalez was arrested a couple of years ago in Cali, Colombia, later extradited to the U.S. for running a sprawling multi-year conspiracy that involved recruiting couriers to transport her handbags on commercial flights to high-end showrooms and New York fashion events, all in violation of U.S. wildlife laws. Lawyers for Gonzalez sought leniency for the celebrity designer, describing her journey, a divorced single mother of two children who designed belts on a home sewing machine in Cali for friends. The journey led to her becoming a fashion icon who outcompeted the likes of Dior, Prada, and Gucci. She was determined to show her children in the world that women, including minority women like herself, can pursue their dreams successfully and become financially independent, they wrote in a memo, her lawyers did. Against all odds, this tiny but mighty woman was able to create the very first luxury high-end fashion company from a third world country. Unquote. The attorney said the 71-year-old designer had already paid dearly for her crimes. Gonzalez addressed the court before sentencing. She said she deeply regretted not meticulously complying with U.S. laws and that her only wish is to hug once more her 103-year-old mother. Quote, from the bottom of my heart, I apologize to the United States of America. I never intended to offend a country to which I owe immense gratitude, she said, holding back tears. Under pressure, she added, I made poor decisions. The Apologies of the Week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. Back next week, same time on this same, what are they called, radio station, or back whenever you want it on your audio device of choice. The email address for this program, your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts. God, I remember those. And playlist of the music heard here on, and all sorts of other things to amuse or bore. All at harryshearer.com. And me, I'm on the thing that Elon Musk wrecked. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead, and to Thomas Walsh at WWNO-FM for help with today's show. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the Crescent City.